Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. Live. Welcome, everybody. I hope everyone's having a blessed Friday. My name is Indy. The gentleman next to me is Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, and welcome to an exciting episode of Indie Game Business. The title of this is Publishing versus Self-Publishing Your Indie Game, but there's going to be so much more in depth into this. It's going to be amazing. So we've got Lucas from Robot Teddy and Richie from Bare Knuckle / Raw Fury. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Let's start where we always start. We'll start with Lucas and then we'll go to Richie. So Lucas, tell us how you originally got into the industry and walk us through your career up to this point.
Right. No, absolutely. So I started off here in Brazil. So I'm based in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, still here. And as most of Brazilians who are trying to perceive to get an industry job, we just struggle a lot until we find something that pays something well, and then we try to stick with it. Back in when I was finishing, before I got into college, a teacher of mine, a history teacher of mine, asked me to help him in this extension program for the college thing that he was doing. So I started to work with several academic stuff for games together with him for like a couple of years. And that kind of led me to pursue something similar for college. And I kind of did some academic work trying to get into game development itself in the narrative side of things. But as I, you know, start to get close and see some of the job opportunities there, which were almost none, I tried to get some game design jobs and also anything related to narrative. That was my focus back then, but I couldn't. I managed to get one internship with, not sure if the company is still up there, but it's Fableware with Arthur Protasio, which is a great guy. I learned a lot with him, but that spurred me to, you know, actually engage with my community of game developers, indie game developers. So with thanks to that, I managed to meet a lot of people who eventually led me to a startup that I joined and later become one of the main people there organizing Game Jam Plus. So I shifted from narrative design to or event organizing, because that's where I managed to land in. And while organizing this event, we managed to get this event to something local, to something global. The game, the event still happening up to this year. It's a Game Jam Plus. It now happens all across the globe, several countries and cities. It's an amazing opportunity for anyone that can join, mainly for beginners. And thanks to that, I kind of jumped into this business development position, which I didn't even know that existed before. I was doing like a bunch of, you know, trying to get more funding, partnerships, sponsorship for the event. And a friend of mine said, you know what you're doing? It's called business development. I was like, is this a thing?
Yes, it's a thing.
Yeah, right?
Nice.
I reached a point, I was in 2019, I was working the startup / event for a little bit over 2 years. But I find myself like, I was trying to teach and do things for people that I didn't actually know how to do it. I still needed to learn more from the industry. So I left my company to start you know, engaging more of this business part of things, right? So I then moved to business development itself in a mobile company from Brazil, from the south of Brazil, Hermit Crab. They're also still going. They now have a big team working several cool projects. I managed to work with some licensing deals and all that, which was very interesting, learned a lot. I managed to jump after that, my first international job. I worked for a publisher in China as a publishing manager for Hyper Casual Games, which was an interesting position. So to not get really into it, I have my comments on Hyper Casual Market, which we'll can talk about that some other time. But it was interesting to understand what I didn't want to do in my life anymore. And after that, during this year that I was working in this Chinese publisher, I was being mentored by Gwen Foster, great friend of ours, Regina and I. And she basically helped me to get a better understanding of what the global market was, mainly for console and PC. That's where I wanted to get. I wanted to get out of mobile. And thankfully, soon after, the company that she was working at, Robotidy, had a position open for a business developer for the funds that they had just opened. And I've been there now for a year, a little bit over a year and a half, helping indie devs with from all the titles that we signed for the funds that we have, for the VR games, but also for non-VR games. And it's just been a wild and incredible ride. I just am very thankful for all the people I've been meeting and getting to know more in the industry. But that's my, in a short, brief way, my journey up until this moment. Yeah.
See, now here's the downside, Lucas. Once you've gotten into the biz dev role, there's no way to get out.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's not.
It's one of those traps that, you know, you get your hand caught in. It's like, you really want to hold on to that thing. So, I mean, I hope you like it because, you know, now you're screwed. You're
never getting out. You're never getting out.
Yeah. Look at me. You see the gray hair? 25 years of biz dev. This is what it does.
Yeah, I have a few here. Maybe it's getting Lucas, to me. Yeah.
Run. Just run. What's your advice for people getting into the industry? Don't.
Run. Other way.
All right, Richie.
It's actually funny how there's certain similarities, and I feel like every single biz dev I spoke to has like the same sort of like similarities. But for me, it all started. I joined an education to become a game artist, and then 2 years in, they were about to actually kick me off because, you know, I joined an I wanted to do something with games. I didn't know what, and I wasn't good at drawing or doing any type of art, but I really loved doing it. And so they were thinking of getting me out of that education. And then there was one teacher who stood up for me, who said like, hey, maybe, you know, he's maybe not good at being an artist, but it looks like he is good at doing project management and managing these teams and all of that. Why don't we let him do that for the remaining of 2 years? And for some reason, they all listened to that teacher. So I ended up spending the last 2 years of that education focusing a little bit of project management, did an internship at like a learning company within the school where we could like try out entrepreneurship and having our own company. So I got to experiment a whole lot. After that, I did decide that it was probably a good thing to do something officially with that. So there is like an education here in the Netherlands where I'm from, called Art and Economics, which is a pretty interesting combination of like the creative side, learning about things like television, radio, movies, games, all these like entertainment formats, but then in the concept of bridging the creative and the economic side of it. So did that. And then in my last year, we had to write a thesis. And in that thesis, I needed to have someone from the industry who would come in and judge that on its merits to basically say, yeah, this is what he wrote is actually good. So I approached the managing director of Dutch Game Garden, which is a game incubator and business center in the Netherlands, to help me with that. he said yes, and basically through us working together on the thesis and him guiding me through that, he offered me a job as junior biz dev, and I had no clue what that was. Similar as Lucas, I didn't even know that that was an option within the industry. So started out there, got mentored there in what that meant. So for me, that ended up being helping studios from the Netherlands, sort of an agent role where I would go out, because Dutch Game Garden was government grant, had government grants. We could go out to these events and pitch these projects and these Dutch studios. Next to doing event stuff, so similar to Lucas actually, organizing events like Indigo and the monthly network launch and all of that. So I kind of grew in that role for, I think, in the end, I worked there for 3.5 years before Callum Underwood jumped in my Twitter DMs asking me if I would love to come and work for Robot Teddy, which at the time sounded was super cool, because I was actually looking at that time to be like, hey, I want to transition into something else. And so yeah, joined Robot Teddy, spent 2 years working on amazing projects such as Among Us and Vampire Survivors and Gang Beast and What the Golf and What the Bat and a whole bunch of other things, and working with some great people. And then after that, it kind of started the feeling like, hey, maybe, you know, I now did 2 years or 3.5 years at an incubator. I now did 2 years at self publishing side of things. Perhaps I also want to explore doing publishing. So I started talking with Raw Fury, which I started at working last January. And besides that, I still had the urge to do stuff with self-publishing. So I also started my own consultancy to help studios self-publish. And that's where we are now, 6 years later from me joining the industry.
Whoops.
I think you're muted, Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was muted because I was typing and my keyboard kept loud as hell. but I mean, you're like me too. You end up doing a lot of side projects in the industry that it's like, oh, this is going to be really quick. It won't take much of my time. Oh, I don't have any more time. All right. Yes. So we're going through publishing versus self-publishing. And this is one of those cycles that we see in the industries every 10, 12 years. It's like for a period of time, you're crazy to go and find a publisher. You're better off self-publishing. And then, you know, everything switches around and you're much better off finding a publisher than a, you know, self-publishing. And if you had asked me 6 months ago, I would be like, no, find a publisher. But now with all of, what's the opposite of consolidation? When everybody's getting, we went through the consolidation phase when Embracer bought everybody, and now we're going through, you know, this downfall phase. It's like I've had two conversations this week with studios that have been around for 10, 15 years, shipped multiple successful games, and they're closing because it's just so. There's less money out there. There's not no money out there. You can still find a publisher. You can still find investment, but there's less money and there's more competition for that money. Mm-hmm. Walk us through the difference between self-publishing and publishing and pros and cons.
I mean, I think Lucas and I had a chat about this like a year ago, and we actually did a talk on this too during GDC, where one of the things that we noticed, and I think it's also what you said, Jay, is like for a lot of developers, it's always the choice of like, hey, money is the biggest issue. And you know, it is. Money is a big issue, right? Because especially depending on your context and situation, it can be more important for others than it is for someone else. But I think in general, the idea of going between one or the other is very much based on something else than money. It's about the fundamental question that I think, and Lucas as well, is about the question of how much ownership do you want and how much risk you're willing to take on. You know, money is, of course, the big elephant in the room, but once you're able to take that away or even put it aside for a little bit, you know, then these kind of questions comes up. It comes up of like, hey, are you comfortable taking risks? Do you want someone else to help you with certain specific services? Because the only thing that you want to do is build your game, or do you like being at the forefront of taking risks? Are you super entrepreneurial and do you want to try out all kinds of different things? And doesn't it matter to you that you're doing, you know, all these kinds of things on the side? So I think it's a more fundamental question than it just being about money.
Yeah. And just to add to that as well, this is always comes up in a way while you're talking to developers, mainly beginner developers as well. As Richie said, money's not necessarily the problem. And as you try to manage everything that you need to do while you're self-publishing, you might find it more difficult than you had envisioned before. Like you might be used to do a lot of things at the same time, but once you have like the project to do everything by yourself, sometimes not just you. There's also your whole team that you need to take care of as well. So like there are several pros and cons, and we'll definitely talk about some of them here today. But one of the main things I get worried is when teams, they think they are ready or they want to self-publish, but they're just not aware of the amount of work that is needed. I know that it can be very difficult right now to get a publisher or even to get hold of money. But you gotta understand like the whole process that a publisher would go for you that you need to go for yourself. But you know, at least now I can see, well, this is my perspective for my community, but this is something that it's here and there we find news and articles about it, as in new opportunities for people to get their games funded, maybe from some grants or for some government opportunities. So it's always good to keep an eye out for things that can at least help you maintain yourself while you're finding the right partner to help you throughout development.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I think it's very much true that, you know, funding has been difficult this last year specifically. But I think in both spaces, both in the self-publishing side, as Lucas mentioned too, but on the publishing side too, there is still, you know, money available, even though the competition for that money keeps increasing year over year because more people join the industry, and especially as it is drying up a little bit today. But yeah, I think so money, while it is important, is not the thing that should drive that, you know, fundamental decision of trying to pursue one route or trying to pursue the other.
So when you see games like, I mean, you mentioned Vampire Survivors,
right?
Stardew Valley is another one. Yeah. When you see these games that, you know, have success self-publishing, especially since they're from small teams, does it help or hurt the development community in general? Does it give them inspiration, or does it make everybody go, oh my God, this is so easy, I'll just self-publish my next game?
Yeah. I've often think about that because it's good to give inspiration to people as like it's possible, you know, to attain some degree of success, but it also creates some unrealistic dreams and hopes over there over the community. But the thing is, like, even those people, they are not alone all the time. They also have several other companies, I mean, to help them to maintain the success, or at least to get somewhere. And this is something that you can read about it, like the struggle that all these people, they're now self-publishing a successful title, that what they have been through to get that. Because sometimes it's just not worth to go through that, even though there is like success waiting for you down the line. Maybe there's like five hellish years in front of you that maybe you just don't want to go through all that. So I mean, it's good when you see a developer getting this kind of attention and success, and I'm happy for them. But it's I would always go for like a safer route that don't endanger, you know, your health in this process, because you can see the story of, you know, I think it's Eric, right? The developer of Stardew Valley, like it's was tough. I'm glad that he managed to land at such an incredible game and get all the money and respect and, you know, that he got from the game. But man, he went through some stuff to get there.
Yeah. And I think that's also the thing, right? I think a lot of this depends on context, right? So
yeah,
for someone to see, like, for example, Vampire Survivors, Luca building a game and that suddenly blows up, it's easy to be like, oh, you know, if he can do it, why can't we, right? But there maybe are specific context to why Luca was able to build Vampire Survivors, right? Luca had experience in mobile background, working on some sort of casino slot games. He knew what kind of worked in making a game that was like, you know, that got you hooked into something. But also his personal situation allowed him to spend the time on that project and then to blow up. And for others that are alone, maybe they can't, right? Maybe they cannot spend years on trying to develop a game by their own without having any additional income to come in. So it's good in a way where I feel like it's good to see these projects, because if you can talk to these developers and can figure out what they did and how they go about it, but also what their context is, it helps you to put your own situation next to that and seeing like, hey, what kind of things match and what kind of things don't match. And usually that's where the details happen, right? That's where situation change and why it suddenly becomes a bad thing to start following what one person did or one team did. Because I mean, you know, in the end, games is hard. I mean, if you look at what games have done, I saw a graph the other week about that 63% of games on Steam make less than $1,000 in revenue, right?
Yeah.
So in that regard, it's good to look at what other people do successfully, but you have to always place it in context of your own situation and probably find that 9 times out of 10, you cannot exactly replicate the situation and where things got big as the way that they did.
Another, I don't know if y'all get Chris Zukowski's newsletter, but if you don't, you absolutely should.
Yeah,
everybody should. That's out there listening. His write-up last week about middle games, that's the other aspect of this. It's like, you've got to keep in mind while you're weighing your risk, it's like, what is my scope?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole article, but basically what he was saying is there's a very small amount of developers these days who are trying to make smaller games that don't have to sell 300, 400 million copies or however many in order to be successful and be profitable. Everyone seems to be trying to go for that end game, you know, that big one. And so, yeah, can you, something like Vampire Survivors is going to be a little easier to pull off because it's not
one person.
So
yeah,
so huge, huge thing. So for those who haven't dove off this deep end yet, explain a little bit of the difference between building a game as a hobby and then building a game as a means to a source of revenue, and, you know, on the business side.
Right. I mean, I think what you just describe as a good intro for that, right? Because I think when you're developing a game as a hobby or even as a side project, that usually means that in your context, you have the time to do that. You have time to, maybe you have a side or you have a job, a day job, and you come home, you start working on a project. And the only thing that basically stops you from progressing with that is, you know, the time that you want to spend on it. If you want to spend 3 years working on that game, that's super great, right? That's the way that you can do it. You can run it for 10 years. Just because if that is the reason why you want to make the game, it's like, oh, I have this great idea for a game and I want to now develop it. And you can spend 5 years, you can spend 2 years, you can spend 10 years. And the only thing that really dampens is your motivation. But the moment that sort of shifts, the moment that starts to go towards, okay, wouldn't it be great if I actually start earning money with this game? Like if I release it, and the moment that sort of thought starts to come in, it probably has to do something with the motivation of why you're building this game. Because maybe you know, a developer is trying to decide if they should start a studio or if they can go full time. So when that starts to change, it suddenly starts to become important to think about things like time and the resources that you're spending, right? If I spend 12 hours a week on my project, and I want to get paid for that time, even if I spend the hours in myself with the idea that I get it later down the line, it starts to rank up, right? It starts to come down to, okay, I spend X amount of hours, my time is worth this, so that means that my game will cost that. And then, especially then the point comes like, oh, maybe now I want to quit my day job and work on this game fully, or now I need to start earning more. Then it starts to become the transition where you go into, you know, not doing it as a hobby anymore and starting to think of it as a company. And then the thinking starts on just more than your game, because now you have to think about, how am I going to finance it? Where do I get this financing from? Do I need more team members? Oh, more team members, more money. Now I need more money, right? So it starts to like snowball.
And it never ends.
And that never ends. And that never does end. And that's, yeah, I think, the moment where that divide starts, from you being able to just sit back, spend your side hours on a project, release it without any marketing, and just being like, oh, this is fun, maybe people will pick it up or, you know, play it, to maybe I do need to make some money off of it. Even if it's a little, even if it's like a couple $1,000s, it still starts to transition into a thing where you need to start taking it a bit more seriously and start thinking about all these other things that go into the world of game business, basically.
Yeah. And I think there's like, when we are talking about hobbies, right? Hobby is something that you do for fun. So if you're trying to get stressed a lot by trying to deliver and finish this game that you're working for a hobby, maybe this is your side thing. This is your side job. This is your second job and not really your hobby. So this is a lot of, you know, of course, this will change a lot from person to person, but it's something that you need to understand, like, yourself, as how much you want to get involved with this. Because we work with a few developers that they're developing their own game during the nighttime after they're done with their day job. So it's not their hobby. It's like, it's their second job. It's something that they eventually might become their main thing, as Richie said before. Oh, okay, we're actually getting money from this game that we did before, and maybe it's now time to transition to that. So if you're working on games for a hobby, it means that you're not expecting, you not necessarily need to expect a lot from that. Maybe you're just releasing that to the community and see people having fun with your game, and that's great. And if it doesn't sell well, that's also fine, because you have your own job and this is just your hobby. But as things are, as you start to depend on this hobby, and then what comes in is what Richie said, right? You need to understand the business part of it, of what you need to get from it to survive and to keep doing what you want to do. So,
And then the question probably comes in again. It's like, you know, what we just talked about before is like, are you able to spend the time on trying to secure these funds and trying to do all that? Or maybe not, but you still have that goal, you know, maybe then it starts. So again, it comes down to ownership and risk and how comfortable you are with all of that in terms of what you then decide to do. Do you decide to go spend 2 years and as a side job basically doing all that? Or do you find a partner that can handle all that for you and all the other stuff so that you can still focus on the game, right? It comes back down to that question then.
So we've already got some really good questions coming in. Let's start off with Andrea on Discord. So what are the primary differences that you have noticed in terms of self-publishing, depending on the country that the company is set in?
Yeah, I think this is a good one. And probably Lucas can tell a little bit more about that one from your perspective in Brazil. But
yeah, so that's definitely tough. And that's kind of not, you don't really have an option. Sometimes, like, you kind of have to self-publish because you just don't have the resources or you don't can't reach the publisher that you would like to work with. So in Brazil, that's been the reality for quite a while, and it still is in some parts. I mean, thankfully now we have a lot of eyes from the industry are getting into Brazil. We have Big Festival, which is a great event happening for like more than 10 years now. But like when I started, everyone was kind of just, you know, trying to get their games out there by themselves on Steam. So like it's hard because it ends up about being about money, because you know that you need to take all the risk for yourself already, because you know that you won't be able to go to a publisher because either you don't speak their language, or they just don't, you can't reach them. You can't go to the events you're going. You can't go to, you know, all the places you're gathering. So the thing is trying to get the resources you need from opportunities and grants that your own community and local government might offer you. So the perspective that I have here from Brazil is that thankfully now we have quite a few programs from the government that allows you to submit games, projects for games, even from like early prototype stage up into something that's newly released. So you can actually fund it and release it and hopefully get some out of it. So you can start and your natural projects and start going to, and maybe finally start going to these events and talking to the people and the publishers that would help you to get into higher stages. But yeah, I mean, now since COVID, things got a little bit more online. And this is something that Richie and I talk about as well. Like, you have more opportunities to network and connect with people that you weren't able before. So we have less barriers, you know, in order to reach the people that have at least the money or the expertise that you need to put your game out there. But of course, it's still, there are other barriers that might prevent you to go and then do that. So what I suggest, and what I usually talk about for people, at least here in Brazil, is like, try to find the opportunities that are available only for Brazil that now exists. Right. And if there aren't available yet, the community that you have, the indie devs that you are working with and you talk to, you guys, the best thing that we did here was to organize ourselves to become relevant enough for other people, other players within our country to understand, okay, this is serious. So there is money in it, because it will end up being about money, of course. But so people will start to put money in it, or at least the government will see that there's a part of the culture. There's like several people actually working and paying taxes that needs a little more help to keep this growing and eventually becoming something that can help another section of the culture of the country to get more jobs, more people engage economically. So it organizing your own community can help you a lot to get more things for you, so you can, you know, get more things for you to self-publish initially and eventually trying to get publishing deals if that ends up being your necessity, or maybe just, you know, so you can self-publish in better circumstances, so you can have more money, you can have more people to help you to navigate that process. Not sure if I went a little bit too far from the question, but I can go back to it as well. But Richie probably also has something to do to talk.
No, but I think you bring up a good point, because I think, especially when self-publishing, and I think this is regardless of self-publishing and publishing, right? The biggest thing that a lot of people need is time and probably some money sometimes, depending on the situation, to put together a prototype of Vertical Slice. And no matter if you go down the self-publishing route or the publisher route, that's usually type of the thing that you need. And a great thing for that is looking at government funding or programs that might help you support to do that. And I think it's very different for everywhere in the world, right? Because I'm based in Europe, so I look from a European perspective, but even here from country to country, it's already different. Here in the Netherlands, we have, I think, a certain program that's up to a certain point, while our neighbors have a lot more funding, on both sides, actually. Germany and Belgium have a lot more funding available than the Netherlands. Similar, I've heard stories in the US, and maybe Jay, you know more about that, but it's different there state by state. But the thing that I do want to tell people, and I think this is something that people sometimes overlook, and that's a little bit maybe the strategic aspect in me as a business developer, is sometimes there's more available to you than you think, because there are certain programs in different states or in different parts of the world. For example, here in Belgium, so our neighbors that have a program that if I would team up with a Belgian studio, I could apply to. Similarly to in Germany, there are programs, European programs, that if you start working with a German studio, that you can start, you know, applying for these German type fundings, as long as the biggest part of your studio is based there. So there's also these type of, there's a lot more usually available to you than you know, and maybe sometimes it can be in a state next to you or a couple state down or a couple countries down. But because we're all so global, especially like Lucas said now with COVID, because we're all online, you know, if you need to up your team anyway, why not start collaborations and partnerships with other teams that are in a similar situation, but maybe, you know, find ways to use that. And I think that's always a good start, depending on where you want to go with self-publishing or publishing, to start your journey at looking at those type of opportunities.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say that I'm partial to the Dutch, you know, group,
right,
and the incentives, but I will say they do bring stroopwafels to all the conferences. So
yes, yes, if, we don't get government grants for that. That would be
that's a shame, really. Yeah, no. But if you need to find me at a conference and I'm not where I'm supposed to be, always check the Dutch area, because I'm probably stealing stroopwafel from Martin.
Yeah.
Nice. Lots of good questions coming in here. And this is the thing that, you know, when we go around a different call, especially like the smaller regional shows, a lot of times those are funded by the government. And especially coming out of COVID, they saw how much money is getting thrown into our industry. There's a lot of these organizations that are popping up and putting more money into games. I mean, I know just Spain and Italy up their, you know, additions in the last year as well. Yeah. All right. So a big one from Sevens over on YouTube. TikTok and Reddit are known to be the most effective social platforms for wishlist and sales. If you have limited time, what other platforms or strategies do you consider worth putting time into?
I think Steam. This sounds weird, right? But I think there's a lot that works within the ecosystem of Steam that not everyone always realizes. Discoverability is a big part on Steam, and there's so many factors that come into play with discoverability, from the little, you know, box art that you have on your page, to like text that you run, to like certain text that you use. Like, for example, if you're in a certain field, take Live Sims, for example, right? You want your game to show up to people who play games that are in that genre, so that when they play a specific game, it shows up. And that can be a major factor in like driving up wish lists and all of that. Because if you can figure out, and I actually found a really great website, so I'm just going to shout it out. I'm not sponsored for this, but if you go to gamelytic.com and look at any type of like game, it shows you what other type of games people are playing. You can also see it on Steam, right? What is recommended if you search a certain game. But those are the type of things that show up to players when they browse through things. It can actually make a tremendous difference. I would say Steam, and it's not necessarily a social media platform, but I think, you know, Facebook and Twitter, or like X, if you want to be specific about it, can have their sort of values in certain different markets. But I think TikTok, Reddit's probably the best thing. Twitch streamers and YouTube streamers are still really great for that. But other than that, I would really advise people to start diving into like the great things. Like, I'm not sure if everyone's seen Moneyball, but I think we're going to get to a point where you can just start to like mix and match these little cogwheels within the platform to like get you in front page or get you more visibility somewhere. It's like, it's really interesting. It's really cool.
Yeah, and one thing I would add to that is, like, I'm not a marketing professional, so I cannot say for sure like what works best and how would be the best way to work on these platforms. But one thing that, you know, that can have some good results is when you're trying to come up with your own community, trying to figure out how to drive more wish lists or whatever. Now that, you know, I think COVID is getting a little bit less worrisome than it was a little bit a few years ago, Events, local events are happening again, and we also have online events for that can be comparable to it. But like when you have the possibility, and that's it, even more when you don't have the marketing knowledge or the social media savviness to navigate that, when you yourself, you can be there, be somewhere to show your games to people, that's also an effective way for you to start and having people to interact with. So like engaging your community this way could also provide some good results down the line. As you start to get people to who actually enjoy your game and say that to you in front of you. And so you want to have that person as well close to you, as this person might also speak to their friends and family about your game, things like that. So I mean, local events are not really a social platform. And as again, I'm not a marketing person to tell you what is the best thing to do. But for the things that I've seen work, of course, it's a way slower. The results will be slower, but they will be there. You can interact with them way more closely. So I think it's also valuable for you to be able to interact with people whenever you have chance, be there local events or online events that you can show off your game somehow.
Yeah, I think was it Chris Sikowski, I believe, and is I'm not sure if everyone knows him, but he's like great at doing marketing and all of that. And I think
he's
marketing
a frequent
comes down
contributor here because
yeah, awesome. Right. Okay, good. So I think in the end, if you have a goal of generating wish lists, right, there is an entire funnel that people go through in order before they start doing that. And I think you need to think about even platforms and all of that are very, you know, great and all, but in the end, it's like thinking about how do people get from seeing my game to the first thing over to converting and trying to wish list, right? So TikTok can be great, right? But TikTok videos definitely generate views and it generates attention, but people use TikTok on their phones. And if you go from TikTok over to Steam, right? You're on mobile Steam. That means you cannot immediately log in. You have to log in. There's like six different steps. So by the time you're getting to that point, people might already have dropped off. Instead, it might actually be better to drop them into your Discord group or somewhere else. So like, don't just think about, oh, what platforms do I need to be on? Because platforms themselves, yes, they're the vessel where people are, but they're not the only step that you need to think about. It's like the entire thing, like watching a video. Okay, how do I get to Steam wishlist? Oh, maybe they first need to come in the Discord. And in the Discord, you have certain news posts or certain type of things or community sort of events that then would pull them or link them to Steam. And from that point on Steam, everything needs to look great and be optimized so that from that point on, they start to wishlist. It's like more than just platforms. I think for me, platforms are probably, you know, it sounds weird, but maybe the least interesting thing about the whole process of doing marketing.
So another one from Discord, can you talk about sustainability of publishing versus self-publishing, making a long career of it?
Whew. Yeah. I mean, I think, so there's no right or wrong in both, right? So I don't think there is a preference or one thing being better than the other thing. Again, it comes down to context. What is your situation? If for you, long-term means that you can spend 10 years on building a career out of it, where you'd be like, okay, you know, I started with this game, and if by the time I reach game 5 or 6, I'm starting to make money and can build out from that, that could be great. If that doesn't allow you to do it, maybe the sustainable way is to think about, okay, I need a publisher. I need a publisher to help me because that will bring more players in. But that point, if you start thinking strategically about it, a publisher will also want to recoup the amount that they invested. They want to take a revenue percentage after your game releases. So then the question becomes, how much does your game need to earn before you start earning from your game with a publisher? And how big does that need to scale? So for certain type of situations, it can make more sense to actually go with a publisher or go the other route, depending on what the context is. Sustainability on itself, I think, is a very big problem in our industry because everything is so hit driven, right? Mm-hmm. One game by you can be really good, and the next game can, for certain reasons, cannot work at all. And I've seen it happen so many times. So self-publishing or publishing isn't really a relevant factor there. I think it's more of like very thinking about what are logical steps for you. I had a chat with a developer the other day, and he was thinking about pitching this project, which was a second project. And his first project he did did alone. And now he suddenly wanted to go do it again. But now his funding required him to go up from like 250,000 to 800,000. And what I basically told him was, okay, well, you could maybe do that. And maybe there are ways to do that. But is that a wise decision to do? Wouldn't you rather see if, like, taking it a step at a time, if you really want to grow or make it sustainable, you should maybe make two or three games in before that, before you start suddenly shifting in the market from things that you've done successfully in the past. So yeah, sustainability, I feel in general, is hard, and the choice between publishing and self-publishing doesn't necessarily affect that. But it is the thing that affects it most, is the decisions you make along the way based on your situation, and not trying to suddenly go from point A to B, but thinking ahead of, like, not everything needs to happen now. If you have a dream game and your dream game is your first game, maybe do a couple games in between before you get to your dream game and it not working out, right?
Are you looking for a publisher for your game? Well, we have something special just for you. It's the most comprehensive listing of PC, console, and mobile publishers in the industry. Over 700 companies sorted by platform with links to their websites. You can get the list at www.powellgroupconsulting.com/publisher-list. And you can get it for free. Check it out.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to answer, honestly.
Yeah, I think, okay. One thing that is also comes to mind is that, as Richie said, right, you cannot guarantee, like, that you'll be stable either way. Several things will impact your how you will live out your life while developing games. You could end up with a bad deal with a publisher, and that will completely ruin your stability, and you kind of will live up on closing new deals over and over again. But also, like, what are your long-term goals? And in, like, because I know a few developers, they are very happy with their stability, even though their games are not selling like crazy numbers, but they sell enough for them to continue working what they want to work with, and they have like their life they wanted. Like, so if you're always looking to have a massive, you know, global success, you might end up hitting, you know, getting more frustrated along the way and possibly becoming less stable during that process. So it's also something that Jay mentioned before, right? Like, people that are targeting this mid games, like this in between, that a game that you can do and maintain and that require less money and resources from you, and you can maintain yourself and your team stable at least for a while, because again, you can never know exactly what will happen. A friend of mine that I used to work with, she said that games are miracles, and that, you know, you cannot even guarantee that the game will get released in the way that you planned before, right?
Miracle so, if they get made at all. Yeah.
I wish we were in a very stable and sustainable industry, but it's not actually the case, right? Especially right now. So yeah, I agree with Richie that it doesn't really change much whether you're going self-publishing or with a publisher. But as it would depend on the goals that you set for yourself, for your team, like what you want to do in the future. Like, if you want to have like a very chill life and you don't need to go to, you know, events all the time. So maybe you can do, you know, games that you can maintain with fewer people, and that will be enough for you.
It's one of those things that you know, it's the classic line on this show, it depends.
And you also context matters.
Where am I? It depends.
Yeah.
You'll often see developers do one project and self-publish, then get a find a publisher for the next one, and then maybe self-publish another one. And if you go through the episodes of the show that we have, we've had several developers on here who have done that. It's, you know, why am I finding a publisher this next time after I had success self-publishing? It does. It really depends on your situation and what you're doing. I mean, we saw for years there were developers of certain genres who had to self-publish. This is the paradox. Because
there was
of
no publisher.
It absolutely drives me ape shit. You know, we didn't have real-time strategy games or space strategy games or even some racing games for a while because publishers would just look at it and go, well, those don't sell. But it's like the reason they don't sell is because none of you will publish one. And then you see indie teams, they start publishing, you know, real-time strategies again and space strategies and all of these things that were considered dead genres, and they're successful with it. And all of a sudden the publishers are like, oh, well, maybe this shit does sell. Next one on mobile tracking and analytics and all of this is another one of those complexities that you don't think of when you decide you're going to self-publish. Tracking things like downloads and installs, daily actives, you know, ARPU and ARPU-poo. I don't know. Is there a difference when you pronounce those things? Is it ARPU-poo-poo?
ARPU-poo-poo.
What tracking tools or solutions have you seen developers utilize that have been effective?
I think it's a difficult one because I think for me, or at least when I was at RoboTeddy and we did mobile a lot, I think we just used the in-platform statistics to start tracking that. I have to be honest in saying that mobile is definitely not my forte. I think that's a whole industry. Even if it's part of the game industry, it's a whole industry in itself and the way that it does work. But I mean, on Steam, there's actually interesting things. Like obviously in the back end of Steam, you can look at that. But if it comes from a perspective of tracking it for other games, there's actually things like steamdb.info, which actually showcase like live players and the number of players on it and the historic amount of that. I used to know quite a lot, like App Annie and all of those, I think, are platforms that you can start tracking it.
Not indie friendly, though.
No, but I think that's the main problem in mobile is a lot of these things, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, Lucas, because you've been in that side of things, but I think a lot of things in the mobile industry are not indie friendly at all, and they're just, you know, big companies that have these solutions that you need to pay a lot of money for in order to start like going really deep on all those numbers and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to mobile stuff, like it's a mess. Like it's a place where, as you said, like the more you spend, the more likely you're able to return. So if you're indie, so you probably don't have like millions to spend to get things out there. But you know, to go back to the question, like it is in specific tools. I'm also not really the most experienced person in this regard. The most that I've been using to track things is indie BI, which is great, but it's not necessarily for that.
I was just about to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think they track mobile yet, but
now they are tracking Google sales, right?
Yeah, but I'm not sure about like things like CCUs and ARPU and all of that stuff. ARPU-poos, yeah. I don't think they track that kind of stuff yet within that. But you know, what isn't there could still come. And at least I feel like with indie BI, not sponsored at all, but I use that at RoboTeddy. I'm using that now at Raw Fury, and we're now using that at Bare Knuckle with my own company too. It's like, you know, tracking that, and it shows you wish lists and like these nice little graphs as things happen is great. And maybe in the future they will have that thing. At least I hope so for mobile too. That would be really cool.
Honestly, I doubt it.
It's hard. It's difficult.
It's going to come around. Yeah. And have an indie version of it, it would already exist. But I mean, this is one of the reasons that we tell developers, I'm just blown with them. And I'm like, don't try to do a free to play. If you want to do an indie game on PC console and then port the premium game to mobile, that actually works. I mean, you can do that, and it's not rocket science. But don't try to do a free-to-play game because there's so much that goes into it that, you know, people aren't aware of, and they don't, and so you end up like just pissing away money, you know, because
you're and that's what Lucas said too. That's what Lucas said too. It's like, you know, the reason these companies exist is because they want to tailor to the persons who spend the biggest on ad spend and want to know all of that. And if you want to have a successful ad spend on mobile, you have to spend a lot of money. So all these companies that do have solutions for tracking that on mobile know exactly who they need to aim for and will likely charge a lot of money that isn't payable for any typical indie studio there. So yes, it's hard.
All right. China question. As a small company with a small marketing budget, should we outsource marketing efforts to Chinese professionals for China? So to increase the chances and to have a chance in the market, or is that only good for bigger games?
No, my answer to this is yes, 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 and yes again.
But you had a no in there.
And I had a no. Okay, well, let me yes, 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 yes. I think, yeah, we saw it at Robot Teddy when I was there, and we're still doing it now too. Like, China is such a big market, and a lot of players on Steam and everywhere play games in China, and they do it through VPNs. They sometimes do it through the official, I think, Steam version, but most of the time they use it through like VPNs trying to access it. So if you want to like increase your revenues too, and your game is applicable to the Chinese audience and it fits there, if you can get a partner in China that can help you to become bigger there, it might definitely be worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, but be warned that it's complicated. We've been trying to come up with an agreement for a version of the game that we're working with for clients in China. There's several things for you to consider and regulations that you need to deal with. So it also depends on what exactly your game is about and if it's multiplayer or not, and how violent it is, and all that.
And yeah, we literally, if you go back on YouTube to the conference sessions we had last week, we literally had an entire session on, you know, indie game publishing 101 for China. So
yeah,
on top of, I mean, I'm just saying every session we have ever had in our 15 conferences that are available for free and not in a vault that it's in there. Just go back and watch it from last week. It's a fantastic talk. All right, we got time for, well, I'm gonna say two more. Do y'all have extra time or do y'all need to bail?
I have some time. Yeah, I can do a couple more questions.
All right. So, and I've got some insights into this one due to the fact that we do this publisher list every single year. So we've been hearing about devs going bust and investor capital drying up. Has the publishing side grown, shrank, or stayed stable?
I think it's like coming. Well, I'm of course a bit biased because I work at one. So, you know, but I think in general, and it's not saying that because I work at one. I think in general, everyone in the industry that has money has been more risk averse in the last year or so. So taking less of a risk on certain projects, funding, like while during Corona, you saw that certain publishers who would have done like 100K or 250K suddenly started to decide to go up with their budgets. They were like, oh, let's maybe go to 500 now. Let's try that out. And there were publishers that had that were like, no, we'll go ahead and try a million now. And from that, it started to scale. And, you know, we're now post-Corona. And you see that certain things haven't panned out the way that they thought it would. And they have taken bets that didn't pay off. And now... Because, of course, you know, getting money from investors or banks in general, which get used by publishers too, is being more like it costs them more too, right? So it's not as easy for them to get an investor to invest or to get capital. I think publishers in general become more risk adverse. There's certain publishers that are very well in certain spaces and they'll probably continue on doing certain things within that genre, but they know very well what they can and cannot do. So, you know, that's probably the thing. I don't think there has been a lot of publishers that have gone out of business as much, but they have been more risk averse and will probably sign less games these upcoming next 2 years and focus on certain, or like building out certain ones that they do have.
Yeah, and just to like complement like also my perspective on things, as in to agree basically, like from the things that Rich here is seeing and from the things I'm seeing as well, it's kind of the same. Like the money is there, but they're not really very, they're not as inclined as they were a few years ago to fund things. So that's what, you know, as we have been seeing lately from news that studios are closing down, is because they were studios that could have been relying on money like this that is not necessarily being getting out to developers, but it's still there, right? So I would kind of say there is a stability as in the amount of money, but it's just stuck. It's not getting out to developers and getting out to studios. So but at least that's what I feel, what I can see. And then definitely in the scenario that they're just very risk averse right now. So yeah, money is there, just not getting out to the right, to the people.
But do you realize how quick this changes? Oh, sorry, Jay.
Oh my God, yeah, it does. But I mean, so yeah. from our publisher list, I can tell you it went from, what year are we in? 2023? I don't even know what year it is. In 2022,
right? Yeah. Okay,
I want to say we had somewhere between 600 to 650 people in our list.
Right.
In 2023, as of January, when we put all these things together, it was just over 550. So we lost about 75 to 100, but the vast majority of those were mobile publishers.
Yeah. I think that's the one that fluctuates the most.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely does. But at the same time, we still see, and the, I just lost my train of thought, the Goat Simulator people, you know who this is.
Coffee Stain? No.
Coffee. Yeah. They are always like an example I put forth to, you know, see how developers grow. They started as an indie developer. They self-published. Then they said, okay, wait, we can do this for more people. And then they started publishing other games. And then they got acquired and all that sort of stuff. So we see that coming too. We've seen several new PC publishers pop up this year. But there has been, the short answer is slight consolidation, but the majority of that is in mobile. It's not in. It's not in PC console.
And I think everyone do need to realize, like, again, I was saying that, but like this can change real quickly, right?
Oh, gotcha.
This can now be the situation, and whatever new, like if something changes in the market somewhere in January or something, it can go very, very quickly. And it's good that everyone sees it and is aware, but yeah, it's also good to stay on top of that and start asking people around, because as the moment this starts to change, it's a good moment to be there, right? Because, you know, you can start pitching in new stuff. And while it might be hard now, if you start hearing around you that more and more people start getting funding from one way or another, it might be an indication that, you know, it starts to go up again a little bit. And it's something that you can profit from and benefit from, too. It definitely will.
The same cycle that we've seen over and over and over again in general. This cycle just seems to be more egg-shaped because we had so much stupid growth during the pandemic. And now, you know, we're getting the whiplash effect from that. But yeah, it's publishers, I mean, investors are going to freak out because recession or Embracer's, fuck the goat. I don't even get started on that one. And now somebody's going to come along and go, oh, wait, well, this is an opportunity, because it is. And it'll go back up. So, bear it. This is not a time to be taking risks as a developer. Play it safe. But good segue into my next question, because I've been waiting to ask this one. I want to see the answer. From NeoWare on YouTube, what kinds of games are a big no for publishers? And we're going to go ahead and put porn out there. That's the obvious one.
I think, yeah, that's probably the... I think this is a broader question, and it's not only applicable to publishers. So it all comes down to the genres, right? There are certain genres where, if you look at it, games, the average revenue for any given game in that genre is higher. Breakout potential is higher. With breakout potential, I mean like the ability to, for a game to earn $1 million or more. And then it starts to become about the situation, right? Because if you think about it strategically, if you have a game, let's say your budget is about $300,000, right? Now, if you were to self-publish, you could start looking at games that have done that, that have done 300,000, and you're like, okay, we can achieve that. When you're talking to a publisher, that is completely different, because first of all, a publisher isn't not looking at, oh, we need games that we need to be in a market that sells games at $300,000 in revenue. No, a publisher is a business. And what does a business want? They want to recoup their investment that they made on you. They would ideally have a bit more money, or like double that amount, because they want to invest the next game. And then there is, of course, profit, or what I would say basically covers all the overhead costs. So usually around like 3x of that amount becomes a thing. So when you're pitching a game for 300K, a publisher is going to look, is this game possible to do like 900,000, if not more? So when you're talking to Big No, right? When you're talking about Big No, it all has to do with the context of that specific publishers. What type of games do they publish? What kinds of games have they published? Are these games that are in, have they sold millions? And is there a chance that your $300,000 game can do the same? I think that's the biggest question versus certain specific like type games. Genres do affect that, right? Because like I was looking up the other day, if you have a visual novel game, the average game in there, like if you're, the average is there like $75,000. So if you go to a publisher and you just have a visual novel, they might not do it, unless your visual novel can maybe be done with, I don't know, $5,000 or $10,000 of investment or something like that. But even then, most publishers would probably not do it because it's maybe not worth their time to start doing that. But other than that, it comes down to the feeling and the security that they have, or the feeling that with your game, they can generate at least X amount that type of revenue. And I think as long as that question is no, like let's say you're in a genre where that isn't the case, that probably be a big no for a publisher. I don't think it's dependent on genre or budget per se.
Yeah, I think Richie pretty much got it down to it. The only thing I would imagine like that would go beyond that is anything that is actively trying to damage. And I mean, even games disrespecting other people are still selling. So yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of people in the world that still buy that shit, Lucas.
And I think I've just thought of another thing that while I was thinking about it, is like, it's also about making your case make sense, right? If you're a first time developer that has never made a multiplayer game and you have no idea how to do it, and you come to a publisher and then pitch them on a multiplayer game that you don't know how to make, and because you just feel like, yeah, we should be able to do that, right? That probably is a no, because they're like, this is a big risk. It needs to draw in a lot of players for people to play it. If you've never done it, you know, who knows if this is going to work. Those type of risks does take away from that. Or for example, maybe you have a team of five and for this game you need 30 people and you're asking for a certain amount of money, but you need to scale up your team to like from 10 to like 30 or 40. That's a massive risk, right? And that those kind of things do tend to like make publishers wary of the type of game that you're doing. But other than that,
I think it's we could say there's like several types of no that might become a bigger no. So you know, as Richie said, if you're like a first time developer and you're pitching for like a multi-million dollar project, you most likely would get a no just because of that. Right, Richie said, like, if it's not a fit to the publisher, this will add up another no that will become eventually a bigger no from the publisher. So the smaller things that the publisher will consider, that different types of no that will give you this bigger no, but there's not a consensus among all publishers that would every publisher will give you the same no. As Jay said, it depends. So, pretty much what Richie said, but I think it's like a different types of no that will get you to this bigger no for different publishers.
Even porn, although the only place that I know to publish that is Nutaku. But aside from that, no matter what your game is, there is a publisher for it. You just have to find them.
And there's a market for it too, in most cases. Like, you know, even with porn, yes, you only have Nutaku, but, you know, it's a big market. Definitely don't let yourself be discouraged from exploring certain markets just because it doesn't seem like there is anything, is something I would definitely say. Look at some top seller lists in certain markets and certain genres. Even those kind of adult games do really well, right? So there is a thing for anything, and I think genre is less of a no than the all around situation in the market and all that goes around with that.
All right, we got time for. I'm going to do one more question from the audience, but all I'm right. going to pose one that I have constantly had as well, because you brought up visual novels.
Right,
visual novels are profitable. I mean, the reason that, yeah, if it only costs you 10 grand to make it, but you're only going to make 75, a publisher's not going to do that because it doesn't pay for
too less for their, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of those. But it has always been, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, one of those genres that I am consistently surprised that no publisher has stepped up and said, let's consolidate, up the marketing spend, figure out how to promote these games properly, because there's obviously an audience for it. But I tell developers all the time, if you have a visual novel, do not use that in your deck, your pitch, anywhere. You have adventure game or a narrative adventure, because those two words, publishers' eyes just roll back in their head. And they're like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Why have we not seen somebody step up and say, I'm going to be the world's best publisher of visual novels?
I think this is my thoughts on it too, because I think I agree with you. And this is the number. I'm so happy that I'm not the only one that had that with visual novel. The one thing I always tell people is even if it has elements from that, don't say that it's that, but frame it as something else. I think that the thing with that genre is that it's a very niche community in certain type of ways. There's certain type of subjects within the visual novel do very well. Others do less so. There are specific markets for it. And I think it's about scale, right? And it's about what I just said about publishers and what all around publishers, I think of how they look at games. And that's if we invest X amount of money, can we make that? And with visual novels, I don't think there is a lot of consistent great examples of those that if a developer comes in and does 200K, consistently have made over $800,000 in revenue. While, again, when you have a solo developer or two developers that build a visual novel and that know the community very well, can maybe make $100,000-$150,000 between the two of them. And if then the development time is low, that could work tremendously for them and do wonders. But I think the problem with publishing is because there's so much involved with that and the overhead costs and all the people that need to be involved. And it's just become harder to make it consistently profitable for a lot of publishers. And I think if it is going to happen, it should probably be one of those people that are in that industry, because I think there is some specific very niches within visual novels that make sense. And it's also hard for any random publisher to just dive in and understand the complexities and the different sort of contexts within the visual novel market.
I'm telling you, somebody needs to do this.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of prejudice in it as well. I mean, it kind of grew into prejudice at this point right now.
Yeah. And I think it's probably the thing what you have with platformers at some point where there's usually three types of games that every starting developer wants to try out to make. And that's a platformer, that's a visual novel, or it's like a sort of puzzle, or well, maybe four. It's a puzzle game, it's a platformer, it's a visual novel, or a multiplayer co-op brawler. I think usually those four are, and that's consistently the ones that every single publisher has probably have problems with doing, unless you frame it in a certain specific other way, or if it does something else. Like, for example, if you take Disco Elysium, I'm not saying that's a visual novel, but it sort of goes towards that, right? It's very visually focused. It is focused on these, if you just look at these character interactions or the way that you choose dialogues, a lot of it that comes from visual novels in that, but it does a whole lot of other things too. So I think definitely you can get away with visual novels, but it you know, as long as it does something specific or something else too, it might still be applicable to certain publishers, and you could very well do it. I probably just don't use the word visual novel. And then,
yeah, you know, I mean, take a look at Hades, right?
Yeah.
All right. Last question. And this is going to be a good one to end on. Do you think the current recession in the industry has created new opportunities for indie studios?
Well, I mean, well, there's always a way to see opportunities, right? Coming from different places, unexpected places. But like from a close perspective, right? From where I can see from friends and my own community, there has been fewer opportunities lately. Like that people basically are trying to live up with things that they used to do in the past, like work for hire stuff, you know, just trying to maintain their studios with things that might not be their main focus, as you know, developing their own games. But like, it's funny to think that thanks to that, it feels like we were able to organize ourselves better to have more opportunities come from unconventional places, as in, like, for instance, the government. So it kind of forced us to think of other ways to continue to keep going. But not necessarily saying that it was because of the recession, but, you know, maybe it was intensified because of it. But yeah, it's tough to say that opportunities are arising because of the recession. The obvious reply to that would be that no. But yeah, I can see a lot of struggle, that's for sure. But I can see also new ideas coming up because of that. More out of necessity, right? Because of, you know, things that were already in motion.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think the biggest, everything that has happened in the last couple of months, from investors suddenly investing millions of dollars into companies and then pulling out, to platforms suddenly deciding to just decide and uproot the way that we work and changing our business models. The number one opportunity I think the industry now has, and this is actually funny, because if you look at the history of the industry, I'm going to sideline a little bit, self-publishing and indies took the control back from platforms and all these like big publishers with the coming of mobile publishing and all the publishing opportunities that then aroused on platforms. And over the years, and I'm not saying that I'm not in favor of publishing versus self-publishing at all, because I think both have a way of working. But you do see that over the years, we sort of let, or developers sort of have let that kind of slide back into a place where it was before, where it's developers these big companies have powers and these big publishers and all of that, where I think the opportunity here is to think a lot more about collaborating together and making things, like Lucas said, working together. Not just thinking about, oh, do I need, maybe we don't need a publisher if we can build our game in certain unique ways, or maybe there is, if we can work together with already existing studios, or maybe we can offer our services there, or maybe instead of hiring a bunch of people, we can start working together with other studios that have the same sort of problems that we do, and one can help each other. I think that's the biggest opportunity here, that it's the realization that we, even with funding, that isn't always a guarantee, and that money, you know, is definitely important. But that even when you have a publisher, sometimes it doesn't mean that game is going to happen. And even there is a more realization moment here. And I think that's the biggest opportunity for developers to really think about, how do we strategically think about what we're doing and not just going with the money route because there is money there, or going, you know, does that make sense? I'm trying to.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on that. Yeah. It's just funny for me. When there's like a bad situation, bad circumstances that are driving people to do something else, it's hard for me to say that they're finding new opportunities. They're finding a way to live out of that, right? It's a
whole other opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, look, you can't go to the grocery store and get dinner anymore. You have an opportunity to learn how to go hunt your own food. That's, I mean, that's an opportunity.
It is an opportunity. If it is a good or a bad opportunity, that's a whole nother discussion. But yes, so that is an opportunity. That's for sure.
And I think also certain genres, right? And you see that still. I think people thinking a lot more strategically about where does what sell and what does sell well and how can we jump in on that. The fact is there's more platforms every day. There's more markets now every day that are still applicable and open that you could go to, even that might, you know, like you said, if you have a game out on Steam and that has been out for a year, but you never brought it over to China, maybe now's the time. Maybe now the time to look at that and trying to explore different markets. Maybe explore with trying to bring your game as a premium to mobile, because I've seen multiple examples of games suddenly starting to do a little bit more well on that, even if it's not free to play. You know, try to think of different ways how you could achieve goals with existing games that you have or existing projects, or how you can apply them to new situations. There's a whole lot that is out there that I don't think people realize, from platforms to storefronts, so many things that you could do. Like if you don't like Epic or you don't like the things that Unreal did or that Unity did or something like that, all right, see if there's other platforms. There's things like Fanatical or whatever that offer certain type of things. There's like Brazilian stores with Stove, and there's very specific things going on. And I think, you know, as long as we always decide to go to Steam or always decide to go to certain specific platforms or to use certain specific things like Unity or Unreal instead of Godot or other things, we will get the same results. And I think now is the time to start looking creative at what else more is out there than just the giving things.
I joke about, you know, having the opportunity to go hunt your own food, but in many ways, it is. It's like I've had conversations this week where, you know, studios that are getting shut down, and one developer told me, you know, the opportunity with that, I mean, and I'm not saying people losing their jobs is good, but the opportunity there is he's able to hire better people because they're not wrapped up in these AAA studios. That's experience that you can now bring into your studio. And a lot of folks too, I mean, another one of these cycles that we see all the time is on the personal career level, where someone will start out indie and then they realize how hard it is, and then they want a little more experience, so they go to a AAA studio, and then they realize, okay, I wanted to be a designer, but I am like designing the inventory system for barbarians on level 8, and they I want a broader market, or I'm just tired of, or they get laid off and then they go back to indie again. So there are opportunities. It's just a matter of if they're the right opportunities for where you are right now. You know, it one of the opportunities is certainly not it's easier to get a publisher. That's not a case right
but
now.
I think, and that's the thing, it's about entrepreneurship. In the end, when you run a studio, you're an entrepreneur, and the entrepreneur needs to move with the market, right? It can be that, like you said, that certain things work for you, or now you have certain accessibility to certain people that might give you knowledge where they previously can't, or maybe now there's a market that opens up, or maybe now, like we had it in, you know, with VR for a while, where suddenly were a lot more opportunities and games that did well in VR. So maybe that was a great time to jump in VR. There's different types of things happening at certain moments. And, you know, try to look around. Agile. Yeah. And look around and be, you know, be part, talk to other people. What are you doing? Does that work? No. A lot of developers, I feel, are still trying to be in their own thing and just focusing on, I want to build my game. But there is a whole world around that is important. Networking, building relations, keeping knowledge and what's going on out there helps you tremendously and jumps on whatever opportunity that might come your way in what form whatsoever.
I mean, I've been running the PAL group now for 13 years.
Right.
And the reason is because we've been extremely agile. You know, the things that we got hired to consult on 13 years ago aren't necessarily all the same things that we've had now. We've had our scouting service came into existence 3 years ago. It's turned into something really big. 4 years ago, it wasn't even on our radar. Yeah. And we've just been doing some other stuff this year. You have to be able to go with the flow in this industry.
Yeah, I think you can maybe the thing is, like, do not try to find the same opportunities that were available before, because now new ones or new things will become these opportunities that you had never considered before. So I need to agree with you both. Yeah, there are new opportunities. Yeah, out of the recession, whether you like it them or not, these are new opportunities that you have. That's I think my view in it.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation, and especially for hanging out for an extra 20 minutes or so here. Yeah,
thank you.
No worries at all. Thank you for having me and us and our crazy talks about business and all of that.
Exactly. Super really happy great. To be here.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome you didn't get too derailed. So that was actually really good. There was a lot of great information. We just want to thank you guys. So here's our shout outs at the end. Join our Discord community, discord.gg/indiecamebusiness. Explore our Indie Game Business merch. New merch. You know you want an Indie Game Business hoodie, right? We all want the Indie Game Business hoodie. And that is at streamlabs.com/indiegamebusiness. And you can sign up for the newsletter. This got all kinds of tips and tricks every week, and there's a list of a bunch of publishers. What is it?
And if you're on the newsletter list, you're also going to get first shot at the list of 900 investors that we have now built, which is sitting in my inbox waiting for me to finalize and get out to the masses. So that is coming in the next week or so.
So you want to sign up for that right now. It's indiegame.business. Go there. You just get it put on the email list and you get all kinds of cool stuff. Thank you guys so much. And awesome. We'll see you next Friday. We've got so many people booked up. Friday.
We have one podcast slot that's still available to the end of the year. Heather has killed it. We're completely booked up.
Yeah. Good job, Heather.
Yeah. Job. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
All right, everybody. Thanks, guys. Everybody Thanks. Else, have a wonderful Thank weekend. You.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.